It's time for an inside look at the most powerful motorsport on the planet. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
It's the most exciting sport on earth as far as I'm concerned.
Take a walk through the Nitro pits as we go one-on-one with the stars of drag racing.
Hi, I'm Courtney Force.
I'm Tony Schumacher.
Hey, you're with Matt Hagen.
This is Ron Capps, Matt Hagen's personal friend. You're on WFO.
Featuring the NHRA's Alan Reinhardt.
Our events are truly an experience. They're not just a spectator event. They are an experience.
So get in, sit down, and hold on with host Joe Costello as he goes WFO.
Thanks, brother. Always love being on WFO, baby. Nobody brings it to you better than you, brother.
Now crank it up. It's time to go WFO. Here's your host, Joe Costello.
Welcome back, NHRA fans, to another edition of WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro. I'm Joe Costello, and we have got winter views from the NHRA Kansas Nationals at Topeka. It went down, it happened, and as far as the numbers go, this might have been one of the greatest NHRA national events ever in terms of just great performance after great performance, side-by-side run, shocking numbers coming up on the scoreboard. And you are going to hear from the winners right here. In Top Fuel, we've got Richie Crampton, part of our Crampton Initiative. We nicknamed it a couple of weeks ago. Basically, when Richie comes on the show, our international audience numbers go through the roof. I wonder why, right? The Crampton Initiative, gaining us listeners outside of the borders of the United States of America. We love when Richie Crampton comes on the show. Ran Larry Dixon in the final round, so what a cool final. Great performances all day long. We're going to speak with Richie about his win coming up in just a little bit. Also on the show, Fast Jack Beckman. Three of his four eliminations rounds in the threes. More three-second funny car runs. Well, I don't know. We'll have to wait for Alan Reinhardt to get that stat, but a ton of them. There was a ton of three-second funny car runs. And in the end, it was Fast Jack Beckman versus John Force. Talk about a great run just in terms of the subplots and stories, and then the numbers, they lived up to it as well. Fast Jack Beckman going to be on this show in just a little bit. We're going to hear what Jack has to say. In pro stock, there is no one hotter than Erica Ender Stevens right now. She wins back-to-back races, then makes the semis, comes right back at Kansas, wins again. Erica going to be on the show, and we have got something super cool to announce with Erica. You got to listen to the interview, but I'll spoiler alert, she's answering questions on WFO Radio next week. That's right. So if you've got a question for Erica, she's going to be back next week answering your questions. We're going to talk to her about it coming up in a little bit. You're going to hear from Erica Ender Stevens. But we start them all off the same way with this man, the voice of the NHRA. He was there. He called the action. I was listening. Alan Reinhardt. Alan, welcome back.
Joe, great to be back. What an amazing event.
It seemed like it. I was listening on the stream Friday and Saturday for various points and parts of the event. And the numbers you're calling out were just outrageous. Hagen goes four dead, and it was like a little disappointing. It was like, ah, a bummer. What was it like being there watching this all go down?
Well, the conditions were just nothing short of outstanding. It was cool. It was cloudy, which kept the track temperature down. And the Topeka racing surface has always been very conducive to great runs in the Nitro ranks, and that's what we saw. You know, Cruz kind of started us off with a three-second run, and then Chad Head stepped up and put up a track record and career best, and then Tim Wilkerson ran his first three-second run, and he did that twice in qualifying also, and just on and on and on and on and on. But, yeah, that four flat that you talked about for Matt Hagen, 4.000, qualified him eighth. It was just that kind of a performance fest. The biggest issue, the biggest downer of the whole thing, was the Sunday forecast was just awful. I mean, it basically was, you know, rain all day and don't even think about leaving the house. And the fans didn't leave the house. It ended up not raining nearly like they had predicted. You know, we got spritzed on and spit on and had to kind of run between the raindrops a few times. We've been through that over the years, you know, where you run a few cars and it starts spritzing, and you hold off, and then you run the jets up and down. You hit the track with the tractors, and okay, bring out the next pair. The real downside of it, we had strong crowd Friday, strong crowd Saturday, and then Sunday, I think the forecast kept everybody home, and we ended up running the race, even though it was there were not a whole lot of people there to see it live, and it's a shame because it was just a tremendous event.
Absolutely, and then later on the TV broadcast got bumped back a bit, so this
part of the TV broadcast is the race wasn't over yet. You know, we were racing late into the evening, and they, I think they kept bumping the broadcast until the race was finished, so they knew that we could put the thing on the air.
Oh, there you go. What time was the final round, approximately?
You're going to make a liar out of me. Seven, that's something you could probably look up on Drag Race Central. Maybe I can do that before. But it was, if I remember correctly, we ended up leaving the racetrack a little after 9, and we did run some sportsman cars after we ran the last Nitro stuff. So it was, 7:30, 8 o'clock, probably Central Time before the finals went down.
Okay. Hey, that works for me because I was wondering, there was baseball on, and then they went to Sports Center, and then the racing came on after Sports Center, and my whole program, the DVR thing, was not prepared to get all of that. But in the end, just looking at the ladders and looking at the numbers, it seems like a tremendous event. We will get into the round-by-round and such, because there's a lot of interesting things involving people who are going to be on the show momentarily. But for the past couple of weeks, Alan, we've been encouraging people to get out there to make a statement and all. I understand if there's a 100% chance of showers, especially in Kansas, I might decide to stay home. But what about Friday and Saturday? Do you think that the fans represented as best as they could, given the circumstances?
I really do. Friday and Saturday look like strong crowds. I mean, Topeka is so big, just physically, and because it is also a road course, and the way the grandstands are set up, there are some grandstands on the right side, the spectator side, for lack of a better, that are right up on the side of the track, and then there's, on the pit side grandstands, there's a massive grandstand that's back behind what is the pit road for the road course. So there are a lot of seats there. It was not a standing room only crowd, but it was definitely very strong on Friday and on Saturday. And it shows Top Alcohol Dragster, which was the last one of the big classes, went down right behind Top Fuel, went off at 21:10 p.m. So that's, 8:10? 9:10? 9:10.
Yeah. Central time. So,
that was part of why the TV show was backed up, because they were just waiting for the race to get finished.
Very interesting stuff. Did you hear any buzz about the future of the facility, both pro or con, anything that the listeners could benefit from or act on if they're looking to signal somebody?
Well, there were certainly a lot of discussions taking place out there. A lot of the local politicians, I think some of the new city council folks that had just recently been voted in the last election, came out to see the facility and kind of, see what the event was all about. One thing that I don't know if people realize or not, but the racetrack has been shuttered. This weekend is the first weekend it's been open all year. So I think it was the first time for, some of these elected officials to come out and actually see what kind of event goes on out there, what kind of show NHRA puts on. Most of what I heard was fairly positive. The city certainly doesn't want the racetrack to leave. It is a huge benefit for the local community, but I don't think the city wants to own the racetrack either. So the real key is going to be if, somebody or some group can come in, put together a proposal, and keep it going. I had a very interesting discussion with one of the guys who at one point was involved with one of the groups, and I don't want to mention his name because he asked me not to, but he said, with the massive plot of land that the racetrack sits on, that they looked at a lot of different possibilities as far as commercial space or shop space or various things that you could do with the land that could potentially be year-round income generators that would just keep the lights on and keep the water bill paid and keep all of that stuff going, so you wouldn't have to rely on just one or two events a year in order to make your money. But he believes that there's a lot of potential out there, and hopefully somebody or some group will come in and take advantage of that potential. To a man, every racer talked to, every crew chief we talked to all weekend said, we love coming here. We'd love to keep coming back for years and years and years. Hopefully they can figure out a way to get this to save this place, and I certainly echo those sentiments. The town of Topeka gets behind the racers. I think the only other one that's in the same league is probably Brainerd. Smaller communities where the race is such a big event when it comes into town, there's no place you can go in Topeka that somebody doesn't, hey, are you here for the races? What team are you with, or what's your job, or what do you do, and the entire town really gets behind it. Hopefully they'll be able to find out, to figure out a way to save the facility and just keep it going.
Let's hope so. We are behind it. Let's make it happen. All right, let's start off with our round by round in Top Fuel, where Antron Brown was the number one qualifier. He got bounced in the second round by Larry Dixon, whose team is just running awesome. They are absolutely on the verge. Other side of the ladder, Richie Crampton marches through the field. An incredible second-round matchup where Spencer Massey puts up an 049 reaction time, runs 373.1, and loses. Richie goes on to take out Brittany in the semifinal. That's got to make those guys over at Force pretty happy to get to the semis with the monster on the side. But in the final round, it's Richie Crampton and Larry Dixon. Boy, Larry is knocking at the door, but not this time, as Richie runs 373.8, wins the race.
Larry was really in it right up until it shelled the engine. That thing backfired pretty hard, blew up, you know, right at or just before the finish line. Larry's speed was down a little bit. But Richie's car, you know, that's an Aaron Brooks, which is Richie's crew chief. That's an Aaron Brooks kind of day when you've got maximum grip, cloudy skies, no track temperature, and you can make a lot of horsepower. That's when Aaron is really in his element, and he showed it off. I mean, you know, 376 in the first round, I think a lot of guys went up a little bit cautious with the fact that it rained. I mean, we were literally ready for the prayer and the anthem, and it started sprinkling. So we sat, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes, whatever, while that happened before we fired cars. And I think some of the guys were being a little cautious, especially the higher qualified cars. You know, if you go up there and you've got a Tony Schumacher, a Doug Collette in the other lane, well, you better be game on. And I don't mean any disrespect whatsoever, but Richie was racing Kyle Wurtzel, who was making his first appearance of the year, who is probably not a car that's going to step up and run 371 or 372. So it gives you an opportunity to, you know, maybe back up just a little bit, not make a mistake. So they ran 376, you know, backing up a little bit. After that, it was 371, 372, 373 for the trophy dash, and that car was just nothing short of amazing.
We're going to speak with Richie about it and the car in particular, because this thing has won a lot of races since it came out at Indy last year. It won Indy, it won Vegas, it won Kansas. So that particular chassis has got a lot of winning under its belt. Notice, though, Alan, the mile per hour on some of these runs is not indicated. And as I mentioned, I was unable to watch the event and see it come up on ESPN to cross-reference. And so I'm a little confused. What's going on with the mile per hour?
Well, there was a glitch in the right lane mile an hour. As you know, most people might not, the CompuLink timing system that we use, mile an hour is calculated independently of elapsed time. And there was an issue with the mile an hour sensor on the right lane that they just simply could not fix at the racetrack. And the worst part about it, you know, Bob Brockmeyer, who is the president, CEO, chief commanding officer, founder, whatever you want to call him, he is CompuLink. And he obviously, you know, concerned about his reputation and his stuff and always wanting to make sure, knowing that the track had sat dormant for months, Bob, at his own expense, went to Topeka, Kansas 3 weeks ago because he wanted to go over the track and check and just make sure everything was perfect before the national event came into town, and they would not grant him access to the track. So after, again, you know, making the trip at his own expense and going out there, they wouldn't let him go out and do anything on the racetrack. So, you know, obviously he turns around and goes back home. When they got there and the glitch was found, there was just no way to fix it on site. So I just hate that the fans didn't get to see some of those mile an hours, because the way the cars were running was nothing short of spectacular. You know, with Courtney setting a new national record in speed and top speed of the meet coming up at 329.9 for Larry Dixon, it just would have been fun to see those other speeds. It had no effect on the outcome of the race, but that was the issue, is that, you know, when Bob went out there to do the pre-event inspection, they wouldn't let him on the grounds to do it. So there was just no way to fix it by the time they got there and found out there was a problem.
That is brutal. I want to mention a couple of other racers, though, and just get your opinion. Leah Pritchett, coming in off a final round, has to run Larry in the first round and is just on the short end of the stick, a bad beat story. He runs 376 to her 378. But that team seems to have found a nice, consistent high 370 combination, the Pritchett team.
They definitely are making steps in the right direction. You know, for a big chunk of last season, they were a good, consistent, low 80s car. They don't hurt a lot of parts that, you know, you I couldn't tell you the last time they rolled trucks behind that thing. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Leah one when we were talking oil downs last year that went the season without having an oil down?
I recall you saying that. We can go back.
I believe she was on that list, but. And they have just been kind of, you know, like picking away and tweaking a little bit here and a little bit there. And, yeah, when conditions are there, they're certainly capable of running well. You know, you hate the fact that, again, when you run as good as they did and then you end up in the number 8 qualifying spot and you've got Dixon in the first round, well, what are you going to do? You know, you go up there and you make another good clean run down the racetrack. And in this particular case, Larry made one that was just a little bit better. But talking about, you know, just the performance all day long. You know, in the second round, try this on. In the second round, Antron Brown, 379. You might as well go ahead and head for Englishtown. You're done. J.R. Todd, 376. Hey, thanks for stopping by. Go take the awning down. Spencer Massey left the starting line first, ran 373 at 327 miles an hour. Excuse me, Spencer, you're in the way. Move out. Richie Crampton advances. And then Tony Schumacher goes 374 at 325 miles an hour, and he gets beat. Now, he got beat by Brittany Force's 024 light, but credit where credit's due. You know, Brittany won the first round on a hole shot. She won the second round on a hole shot and ended up in the semis against Richie Crampton. But when you're talking about the fact that 374, 373, 376, 379 are all losers, you know what kind of a performance event that you had.
Yeah, and we need to really do a good job of trying to make people understand that's what makes it awesome, that you can be great and still lose by someone who is greater on that given moment. Kevin Kinsley, I'm listening to you guys. I know you lost a session at the end of it all, but I did I hear Kevin Kinsley and that Gas Monkey team went mid-380s? And if so, that sounds like they, in their extremely limited schedule, are really sneaking up on it. I know on this given race, a 385 isn't stellar, but they have found consistency in a team that only runs every once in a while. That's kind of nice to see them doing that.
Well, and they have. They've got John Smith over there helping out, and he's obviously a guy that's been around this sport a long, long time. And again, kind of like Leah Pritchett's team last year. They are trying not to hurt a lot of stuff. They don't have a huge budget. They don't have a huge inventory of parts. So you go out there and you just kind of stay within your means and try to make clean runs down the racetrack. That's what they're doing right now. You know, are they a team that at this point in time is a threat to go out and dominate and win races? No. But are they a team that at this point in time is going to qualify? It looks like they're going to qualify every time they bring the car out, the way it's running right now. And they're a team that could go a round or two just, you know, by going down the racetrack. And how many times have you seen it? You know, hey, we know Joe Costello's got a better car than Alan Reinhart. But if Joe Costello goes up there and makes a mistake, whether you flinch and miss the tree or whether, you know, you underpower the track and shake the tires, if I just make a clean run down the racetrack, I can take you out, even though you certainly are the favorite driver. And obviously, you know, that's fantasy world that you would be the favorite driver, but that's kind of what we're going for here.
Listen, you don't want another rivalry on your hands. You're already...
No, I'll stick with the one I got for now.
There you go. Settle that business before you move up to race against Joe Costello. Now, let's move over to Funny Car, where if there was a class that could have been more competitive than Top Fuel, how could it possibly be? And yet, just looking at the numbers, Chad Head and you mentioned Wilkerson and all these three-second runs, and that's what I really love about Funny Car right now is that this is my belief that I'm going to put out there is that once we switch to 1,000-foot, for all the right reasons a couple of years ago, it kind of threw off the reference point for a lot of fans as to what was a great, amazing run and what wasn't. The Funny Cars, though, being right on the verge between 4 seconds and 3 seconds, lets them know it's real easy to follow. If you see a 3 on the board, it is a great, amazing run that you have just witnessed. If you see on the 4 on the board, it could be great, but not as great as a 3. Simple. And we saw so many 3-second runs, perhaps the most at any event to this point, because they were coming up all over the place.
Yeah, no question. I mean, there isn't even a close second. You know, here's final qualifying. Chad Head, 396. Tim Wilkerson, 397. Cruz Pedregon, 397. Ron Capps, 398. John Force, 399. Jack Beckman, 399. Alexis DeJoria, poor Alexis, 3.994. She's 7th. And then Matt Hagen, 4000, was 8th. And that's the way it was all day long. To give you, here's a little point of reference. Calendar 2014, from Pomona to Pomona, there were 19 3-second runs that came up on the scoreboard. That's qualifying, that's eliminations, that's total. 19 three-second runs in the entire season. In 3 days in Topeka, and we missed one qualifying session. The Friday to the Saturday night session rained out. So three qualifying sessions, four rounds of elimination, 15 three-second funny car runs.
Unreal.
Yeah, it was. If you were a fan of funny car performance, it was definitely the place to be.
And we're going to get there soon with Top Fuel when we start tickling the 360s, and then that'll start happening occasionally, and then it'll happen more often. But once you see the six on the board, that will be easy for the casual fan to say, hey, look, that's different, like the 3 second is on the board. But how about Jack Beckman? This guy, a 3 second run in the first round, a 3 second run in the second round. In the semis, he ran 4:16 to beat Del Worsham, and then a 3 second run in the final round. So that has to be the most 3 second runs by any one driver en route to victory, I would imagine. 3 out of 4.
Well, Jack Beckman has more 3 second runs than any other driver. If you just total by, he has more 3 second time slips than anybody. But, you know, I mentioned a minute ago, Aaron Brooks and cloudy skies and great racetrack conditions. You know, he's a hold my drink and watch this kind of guy. You remember who Jack Beckman's crew chief is, right?
Absolutely.
Jimmy Prock is not known for being shy. He's a guy that is always going for it. And if you give him conditions that'll hold it, get out of the way. And that's just kind of the way it was, you know, in the semifinals against Worsham, because they certainly know what Dell's team is capable of. You know, Dell, who went 398 or in the first round, 398 in the second round. Both of them got out there, kind of rattled the tires. Jack was able to get his to recover, so he gets away with a 416. You know, still had good speed at 319 miles an hour. And then in the final, they calmed it down just enough to get down the racetrack. And you know, I could kick John Force right in the shin. I really could. Because he, especially in the final rounds, is notorious for rolling in a few extra inches, right? Trying to cheat the finish line a little bit, trying to get whatever advantage he can. And so he runs 4.002. And what I was really looking for is the first side-by-side three-second funny car run. You know, I don't believe, and I checked with the stat guy, he didn't know either, but I don't believe that anybody has ever run a three-second run in a losing effort. And I was really looking for the side-by-side three-second runs in eliminations and didn't see that. So that was the one thing I was disappointed about. Obviously, you cannot at all, I don't care how big a John Force fan you are, you cannot be disappointed with the Infinite Hero car winning on Memorial Day weekend. And Fast Jack Beckman, who, you know, obviously walks the walk as an Air Force veteran as well as just as well as talking the talk. So it was a very fitting car to be in the winner's circle that weekend.
Absolutely, and all the subplots with John's guys leaving Force to go to Beckman last year and all that soap opera stuff. They're handling it great, and John's got a new team, and John is back, clearly. But if you're a fan, and you're kind of just talking a little smack with a fan near you, that had to be fun to talk about Beckman versus Force and all of that stuff in the final round, and then to having a final round that is as entertaining as that, a great race, that's what it's all about.
Well, you look at John Force's road to the final. You know, the DSR guys thought they had him surrounded, and they finally got him. You know, John beats Tommy Johnson Jr. in the first round, Ron Capps in the second round, Matt Hagen in the semifinals, and then Jack finally got him in the final round. But it took the Don Schumacher Racing guys 4 shots to knock John out. And the other thing that I thought was just amazing, and we talked about it extensively all day long, Del Worsham in the first round beats his teammate Alexis DeJoria, runs 398.8. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not going to get you lane choice. So he comes back in the second round, runs 398.4 to beat Tim Wilkerson's 4 flat. You happy with that?
Oh, I'll take it all day.
Not going to get you lane choice. And then he comes back in the semis against Beckman. But, I mean, you run 398 back-to-back, and you're still going up asking the guy, which lane do you want? I mean, what, are you kidding me? But it was, like I say, it was just that kind of day. It was, if you like performance in the Nitro classes, it was an amazing day at the racetrack. And congratulations to Jack. That team is back on track. You know, after he won the championship, and then, you know, his struggles are pretty well documented. You know, a couple of years without getting a winner's circle. At one point, he went like 3 or 4 months, never saw the light come on his wall. But Jimmy Prock has gotten adapted to the subtle differences in the Schumacher stuff because, you know, they make all their own parts over there, kind of like John does, and they're just, you know, they're a little different. They have a little different personality. So it took Jimmy a few runs down the racetrack to get his style of finesse to match up with the pile of parts that they've got to work with right now, and Jack Beckman is certainly a championship contender, no question.
And as you said, the Infinite Hero program is such a good program that any victories that they get to enjoy are far larger than just a drag racing victory. It just it goes so much more deep into the fans and the family members who have served. It's something you can definitely rally behind every time Beckman turns on a win light. We're going to have Jack on the show here in a few minutes, folks, so we'll get to hear Jack Beckman's perspective. Now, Pro Stock, Erica Ender Stevens, didn't win three in a row in Atlanta, got taken down, but the sign of a champion, in my opinion, is to be able to just shake it off and get right back out there. Sure enough, number one qualifier, and I believe low ET of each round, going on to the final round, taking out Greg Anderson with a 009 in the final round. We've made a lot about Erica's ability to really cut a great reaction time in critical moments, and this is another example of that.
I think that's exactly right. You know, she has turned into one of the best pressure players in Pro Stock. If she's got a performance advantage, then she can go up there and be, you know, 30 on the tree or 35 on the tree and make a clean run and be fine. If she knows that she needs it, well, she can go up there and she can get the clutch out basically as early as she needs to. And it has really turned into one of the better pressure players in the class. Three qualifying sessions, four elimination rounds, and she had low ET of every round. The amazing thing about Pro Stock is, you know, as close as the cars are, Jason obviously had the dominant car in Atlanta. And then he came in here and ran okay. Ended up, you know, breaking something in round number one and bowing out early. Chris McGahey couldn't do anything right in Atlanta. I mean, I don't know that he ever pulled the parachutes in Atlanta. And then he comes in here, qualifies third, has a very fast car, goes to the semifinals. You know, Erica, who certainly wasn't terrible in Atlanta, but you look back at the two previous races where she had the dominant car, and then something about Atlanta, they just never found the little nuance that put them in the performance realm that they wanted to be. Well, they come rolling into Topeka, and for whatever reason, found it, like immediately. We're fast right out of the trailer and fast all weekend long. You know, Nick Ferry and Jake were there, the two guys that take care of the horsepower. That's pretty much a home race for Elite Motorsports. They're based just south of the Tulsa area. And so between, you know, Dallas and Topeka, I think that's the two closest mileage races to their shop. So they had a lot of people there. They had guys from the shop that were there, and they showed off, flexing their muscles and working their way into the winner's circle.
Very impressive, and as we mentioned, we'll talk with Erica about it. Erica going to be on the show. She's going to give us some details and a slightly abbreviated winter view here on WFO Radio, but only because Erica has agreed to join us again next week on the show as we get ready for Englishtown, and she's going to answer questions from WFO Radio listeners, Alan, so you don't have to. How about that?
Oh, you know how much I look forward to that.
I know. That's why I'm kind of like softening the blow by mentioning it now so that you can prepare yourself mentally for not having to answer questions next week, because Erica is going to answer questions from WFO Radio listeners. But you know what they have to do. They have to call it in. They have to say, hey, my name is Mike. I'm calling from Atlanta. And this is my question for Erica, WFO. And they, you know, they hang up, 954-889-6796. We'll be presenting these questions to Erica this week, so people need to do it now. But Alan, that's right. I hope it doesn't hurt your feelings too much to not be able to answer the questions next week.
I will figure out a way to muddle through.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
No, I will figure out a way.
That is good. I appreciate the way your flexibility on this. But isn't it cool, though, that we did CAPS a couple of weeks ago, and it's kind of, I got such positive feedback about the fans being able to submit whatever their silly questions are, and some of them are silly, but that's the fun of it. And Erica, I spoke with her a little bit earlier, and she said, you know what, whatever they've got, I'm ready for it.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that, too. I'm always grateful when somebody takes me off the hot seat, so... That's a good thing for me.
Isn't that the truth? And now let's talk a little bit about some of the sportsman action out there. I understand there were a lot of cars on the premises and some great Lucas Oil Series action as well.
Well, you know, Austin Williams needs to just move from Texas to Topeka. The Stock Eliminator World Champion had won this race now for the third consecutive year. And whatever it is about this place is just magic for him. Tommy Phillips won. Of course, he's one of the best ever in the heads-up superclasses. And what's probably going to be the biggest headline maker is Larry Larson winning in Top Sportsman. He qualified number one and ended up leaving with the trophy And for anybody who doesn't know who Larry Larson is, do a little Google search on Drag Week. The vehicle he was driving that in the final round went 240 miles an hour, 617, 6.17 at 240 miles an hour, is a street-legal truck that he literally drove from his Missouri home to the racetrack, raced in Top Sportsman, won the trophy, and then drove it back home.
You're blowing my mind, Alan, because I know people need to understand that my drag racing knowledge started off with NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing, and then, of course, expanded into bracket racing in the Lucas Oil Series classes. But now, as I'm around it more, my knowledge base is growing to a lot of these other things that go on, like the quickest streetcar and all of that stuff. And so I became aware of Larry Larson through Alan and some others, Brian Loans, about what they have done. But the idea that he could go out with that machine and lay down some big numbers and it's a street car, that's one thing. But the idea that he could go out there and win in Top Sportsman a bracket race is a whole totally different thing, Alan. That's it's blowing my mind to hear you say this.
Well, the truck is nothing short of amazing. And again, anybody that wants to Google it, you can find a lot of information about it. It was on the cover of Hot Rod magazine a year or so ago when he put it together as well. It's a twin-turbo big block. And when it's in street configuration, you know, obviously you're not running any boost. You can just kind of cruise a turbo car without running boost. They run fairly low compression, so you can run gas in them and just drive them, you know, drive them down the street. When he switches it over to race configuration, well, he switches the fuel system over to an alcohol system, and obviously he puts slicks on it instead of the street tires, and it puts a wheelie bar on it that he doesn't have on it on the street. So it's not, you know, it's not identically the same that you drive. But Drag Week is a contest that is done annually where they run, I believe it's five different racetracks or maybe it's six, and the cars have to drive from track to track. So you go to Kansas and you make a couple of runs, and then you load up and you drive, not put it in a trailer, but you drive to Memphis and you make a couple of runs, and you drive to St. Louis and you make a couple of runs, and you make this swing. And Larry Larson has won that thing like five of the last 6 years or four of the last five or whatever, but this truck has been in the 5 second zone when it was in full tilt race configuration. This weekend, because Top Sportsman is going to have a quicker turnaround than you know, in under normal circumstances, Top Sportsman would have a little bit quicker turnaround. He left the radiator in it, some of the other stuff that he takes off of it when it's in all out race configuration. So, it wasn't going to get into the 5 second zone. Of course, you can't do that in Top Sportsman anyway. But it ran very consistent, very fast, and it. It is a work of art to see. Larry Larson is a fabricator and a race car builder. He built this thing literally from scratch, and it's just a cool ride. And for all that he has accomplished, to now have an NHRA National Event Wally, I think was a pretty special moment for him. His wife was just going absolutely crazy on the starting line.
I just couldn't help but go and look at the round-by-round and see some of the different runs, and there's something in the cosmos, Alan. When you've got good things going, good things happen. In terms of just like the runs that he made and how he won, including having a perfect reaction time in the fourth round, and then in the final having basically the opponent go 002 and go down there and break out, worried about that tremendous mile per hour charge and winning the race. That's just, you got to do it. And to be out there and actually do it and take advantage of different things happening and win a Wally, it's very difficult, and he did it.
I guarantee you, Sean Dodd would love to have that one back. Sean had kind of an interesting weekend as well. He was the runner-up in Top Sportsman. In the first qualifying session, his car pulled up under the tower, and the right slick went flat. So he didn't even get the first qualifying session. Obviously pushed him off to the side and had to get the tire changed to get the thing back. And so he came up, just made the one qualifying run. Since with the rain and with the weather conditions that we were dealing with most of the weekend, some of the guys, didn't get their full complement. But then he goes into eliminations, and he was solid the whole way through. And I guarantee you he'd like to have that one back because he is a very good racer, been around for a long time. But when you know that, hey, look, I'm going 180 miles an hour, and this guy's coming at 240, trying to judge the stripe, looking back over your right shoulder out of a Pro Stock style full-bodied car is not an easy thing to do. So you dial it what you think is honest. You hold your foot to the floor and you hope for the best. And Larry won that last round probably on intimidation, but it doesn't matter. He won it, and he'll be talking about that one and remembering it for a while. I have a feeling for all of the awards and all of the accolades and all the stuff that he has in his office, I think that NHRA Wally is going to have a pretty prominent spot there.
Yeah, that is outrageous. Matt Driscoll winning in Top Dragster. Paul Winklebauer winning in Super Street, Rustin Mays in Super Gas, Tommy Phillips, as you mentioned, in Super Comp, Austin Williams in Tommy Phillips in Super Comp, Austin Williams in Stock, Pete Peary in Super Stock, Lufico Jr. in Competition Eliminator, Brian Haugen, Joey Severance in the alcohol classes, and Tommy Grimes in Top Fuel Harley. Saw some cool shots of those guys in qualifying up on the back wheel. Alan, great job as usual. Kansas is in the books. Next week, we will hear from Erica as she does a Q&A. And then it's time for E-Town, a little English town, Epping, back-to-back. It's going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. A couple of last notes. Tommy Grimes had just an amazing weekend on his bike as well. Of course, you know, you expect that Ray Price Harley to run good. Joey Severance, though, you know, you see, hey, Joey Severance won, and you go, oh, those guys are still running good. Joey Severance was driving Norm Grimes' car. Joey was not in his own car. He was in the one that Jim Whiteley had been driving. And that car ran very well all weekend long, ran one of the top 10 runs of all time. Brian Haug won Alcohol Funny Car, as you mentioned. It was his wife Mindy's birthday on Sunday, and she told him flat out, look, I don't want a diamond. I don't want this. I want a Wally. No pressure. And I think you also need to give credit to the Gordons. Doug Gordon, who qualified number one, made back-to-back runs at 549, which is the first time he's been in that 540 range. So, you know, the competition level was pretty high there. And, again, it was just a fun race to watch. So hopefully we'll have more of the same. And I'm headed to Fontana this weekend. So if anybody's going to be out in Southern California, we have got a Jegs Pacific Sports Nationals going on out there. No funny cars, no Top Fuel cars, no, but a whole lot of sportsman cars. And it should be a fun event there at Auto Club Dragway, at Auto Club Speedway, which is code for Fontana.
That is awesome. That is very cool. I can't wait to hear how it goes next week. And more is happening at that track. That's exciting.
Yep, and then, as you mentioned, then Englishtown, then Epping, then Bristol, and we're really getting into the meat of the season right here. It's time to put up or pack up. We're going to start separating the contenders from the pretenders here pretty soon.
On and on to the break of dawn. We've got the winter views coming up next. Alan, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Joe, always a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you next Tuesday, and geez, I'm so disappointed about that question thing.
I know. Well, maybe there'll be some overflow or something, Alan. We could
give me one. Just give me one.
All right, there you go. We'll give you one of Erica's extra questions.
Actually, give me all of Erica's questions, and I'll answer them like I think Erica will, and it'll be like match game. We'll see if our answers line up. No, never mind.
But that does sound fun. Maybe we'll have to apply that at some point in the future. I like it. Alan, great job. Thank you so much.
All right, Joe. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Alan. There he goes. Alan Reinhardt, the voice of the NHRA, with us here on WFO Radio. I love starting a show off like that each week. But now it's time for the winter views. Richie Crampton, Fast Jack Beckman, and Erica Enders Stevens on the show. And guys, don't miss your opportunity to submit a question for Erica. We'll be talking about it with Erica coming up in a little bit. She's going to submit to your questions, whatever they are, but get them in now, as in start preparing to call in your question right now. 954-889-6796. It works just like a voicemail, anytime, day or night. So 2 a.m. after you hear the show, if you think, I've got a question for Erica that could be fun, funny, informative, or enlightening to me as a fan of Erica, pick up the phone, dial the number, and leave it just like a voicemail. My name's Roger. I'm calling from Alaska. My question for Erica is this. Thanks for answering WFO. That's a prototypical question. They last about a minute, approximately. And then we'll gather them in, and we'll play them for Erica, and we're going to do that later this week, and then use it on the show next week. So don't wait too long. Get those questions in ASAP for Erica Enders Stevens. So we got the winter views coming up, but first I want to let everybody know that I'm not a lawyer at Spiegel & Utrera, PA. You got that? I'm not a lawyer. I do a radio show, a podcast about NHRA and Mellow Yellow Drag Racing and NASCAR and IndyCar and otherwise. But our listeners, they definitely have businesses and they need and require free business and legal advice. And so from New York to Florida, LA, and all points in between, right here in Miami, you can sign up for free business and legal advice for 30 days. It is a 30-day free membership to what Spiegel and Utrera PA call their General Counsel Club. You need general counsel? You want to join the club? It is absolutely free. All you do is go to WFOradio.com and click the AmeriLawyer.com banner ad. It says free legal advice. And you click that, and you submit your name, your street address, your city, your state, your zip code. And they will send you a membership card, and you will be receiving the Entrepreneurs Alert newsletter. There is no downside, no credit card, no obligation. They can help you incorporate. They can help you with subchapter S status. They can help you decide buying versus leasing options for your business or equipment. How to turn hobby expenses into legitimate business expenses. That is something that is absolutely vital, especially for a lot of the racers out there who are also business people. Regardless of what your question is or what kind of advice you need, the people at the General Counsel Club are there for you. They can help you avoid critical mistakes in the world of business as well. Go to WFOradio.com. Click the AmeriLawyer.com banner ad, and it takes you right to a specialized landing page. Joe, why don't you give out the information? The answer is there's a specialized landing page for you, for friends and fans of WFO Radio. You can even hear the AmeriLawyer.com podcast that we did with questions and answers from listeners out there, whether it be starting a church or trying to deal with information from the IRS. It's all on there. Join the General Counsel Club and you will see there is a wealth of experience and knowledge available to you as part of your membership of the General Counsel Club. Once again, go to WFOradio.com, click the AmeriLawyer.com banner ad, and input your information. There is no obligation, no credit card required, nothing, just receiving the newsletter and the information membership card, of which you can put to use next time you have business or legal questions. You can get some advice from the folks at Spiegel and Utrera PA, big WFO radio sponsors. You can check them out. Like, we are going to check out the winter views coming up next with Richie Crampton, Jack Beckman, and Erica Ender Stevens, all coming up on this edition of WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Your dad wants a tie for Father's Day. I'm afraid he's not going to get it. Because when two 10,000 horsepower nitromethane burning dragsters or funny cars face off, they never tie. Get Dad what he really wants. Tickets to the NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals at Bristol Dragway. Father's Day weekend, June 19th through the 21st. Tickets start at just $25. For purchase the whole weekend for just $79. Call 423-BRISTOL or visit thundervalleytix.com.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's funny car chap, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Or visit frankhawley.com.
WFO Radio t-shirts are now available. Wear your WFO with pride. Supplies are limited. Click WFO Store to order yours today.
Hey everybody, Joe here, and I hereby decree on behalf of the WFO universe, the winter is over, which means it's time to grill. Get yourself some Rodax Coffee and Grills.com, barbecue, spice rub, hot sauce, and of course, incredible coffee. They've got the WFO Radio Blend, they've got the Bang the Blower, they've got the Exotics. It's all roasted fresh per your order, representing the top 5% of coffee throughout the world. Go to RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com or give Marvin a call. 817-924-6821 for RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com.
Hi, I'm Larry Dixon. You know, there's more to racing than pushing a top fuel dragster down the track at over 325 miles an hour in less than 4 seconds. Like in any business, it takes careful planning and hard work. YourVelocity.com provides the tools and information you need to effectively start, grow, and run a successful business. I'm excited to work with Velocity, not only as a spokesperson, but as a client. So don't spin your wheels. Visit YourVelocity.com today.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio. What a weekend. The Memorial Day weekend was out of control. If you're a racing fan, they call it the greatest day in racing for a reason. The entire world is focused on something motorsports related in the world of NHRA drag racing, no different. Out there, the Kansas Nationals, it happened, it went down, it's in the books, and we're going to talk with the winners, the WFO Radio Winterviews. And a few weeks back, we started an outreach program to all our international listeners to try to build the audience, especially down under. We called it the Crampton Initiative. Every time Richie Crampton wins, we're going to come on and certainly reach out to the fans everywhere here, including the United States. Joining us now, driver of the Lucas Oil Top Fuel Dragster, Richie Crampton. Richie, welcome back to WFO. How are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. It's the plan is working. Richie wins. He comes on the show. We grow the audience. That's the way I imagine it happening. What do you think?
I think that's a good theory, man, because I'd like to continue to keep winning, so hopefully you'll have a massive audience in Australia by the end of it.
I hope so, too. I think so. Listen, I have people tell me all the time, and you live in the United States, and you're a United States citizen, and obviously the country loves you as well, but the fact of the matter is we want this whole sport to grow worldwide. There are drag racing fans out there that we want to let them know what's going on behind the scenes, and I don't even know what it's like to have to seek out coverage and wait for coverage like so many fans around the world do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, for me, it was well over 10 years ago living in Australia, but I would try and keep up to date with the stuff. And, you know, it was hit and miss whether we would get it on TV back then. And then, of course, you'd have to wait a while to get your national dragster to read about it. But from what I understand, they get it on time these days, and that's pretty evident because almost as soon as I stepped out of the race car after the final in Kansas, I had messages from the UK, Australia, of course, and of course a bunch of US support as well. So people all over the world are becoming more and more up to speed, it seems.
I agree. I think it is great. And we love the fact that we are a part of it. Let's talk about this race. First and foremost, we have been billing this as an important event beyond the scope of Memorial Day or going out and having a good time and enjoying racing. We have been talking about this as a way for fans in the middle of the country to make a statement about a racing facility that has had some trouble. This event, some have talked about, maybe it could be the last there. Who knows? What was the response like from the community, Richie? What were you hearing, and what were the fans like when you got to interact with them?
Well, the fans, as always, were just fantastic at Heartland Park in Topeka. I mean, there's always been such a big fan base that makes the trek from all over the heartland of the U.S. to that particular race on Memorial Day weekend, and, obviously there was a lot of uncertainty in the future of that facility, which, you know, it would be a huge shame if we weren't able to continue to go race there, with all the history out there on Gary Ormsby Drive. But, I think everyone was pretty optimistic, and, they still come out in droves given the inclement weather that was on the horizon, and, still had a great time and enjoyed some good close NHRA Mellow Yellow drag racing. But in some ways, if we never get to go race there again, I was the last winner there in Top Fuel. That's kind of selfishly neat on my behalf, but I honestly think that all the right things will happen, and we'll get to continue to race at that pretty popular racetrack venue in the middle of the U.S.
Absolutely, and I understand a little selfish thought, especially the way it went down. Let's talk about it. You were the number two qualifier. Qualifying was just outrageous, the numbers that were coming up on the board, and that extended into eliminations. In the first round, as number two qualifier, you had to go up against Kyle Wurtzel, who shows up every now and again and puts a 390 up on the board, certainly forcing you guys to beat them. They weren't going to make a mistake. You guys went out there and did it with a 376-2, getting by Kyle. Then the second round, Spencer Massey, but a 371-0 beats a 373-1. It has to be in the top five side-by-side drag races. Tell me about that run against Spencer.
Well, obviously, a huge round there. I mean, that was a big boy race, so to speak. I knew I had to be on time because Spencer is deadly on the starting line. And of course, we both had some really fast race cars to work with on race day there. So I'm not sure where it falls in the quickest side-by-side runs in history. I really wish that our Lucas Oil Dragster would have ran on all eight cylinders to the finish line. It actually dropped three holes down there, so could have, should have, would have. We could have done a little better than that 71, but nonetheless, it was a great race, and, you know, it was just, it seems like Spencer Massey owns Topeka in recent years. You know, he's had a lot of success there, so once we were able to get around him, confidence was pretty high. You know, that's a tough team over there, but Aaron Brooks and this entire Lucas Oil organization are just, you know, when the weather's like that, I think everyone knows just how good these NOR race cars can run.
No, Aaron has clearly got a tune up that when the conditions are Candyland or really good, you guys are the favorite as far as I'm concerned, and you're certainly making a case for that with each one of these wins. In the semis, you had to go up against Brittany Force. Of course, a huge announcement coming out of that camp with Monster Energy, two races back in Atlanta, funding for Brittany. Brittany's going to be in the sport for a while. It is good for the sport that she is going to be out there carrying the same branding as a Kyle Busch or a Lewis Hamilton does on race weekends, and goes out there and beats Steve Torrence in the first round and Tony Schumacher in the second round on a big hole shot. Now you got to run against Brittany in the semifinals. I don't think there's a driver more hungry to have success than she is. The reaction time's pretty similar, but another hammer just dropped on top of her, 372-0 at 327, and you punched your way into the final.
Yeah, you know, it's I had to race Brittany in the first round in Atlanta, you know, after that Monster Energy announcement, and I was able to get that win over her, but we all know that her win's coming real soon, so we weren't taking her lightly in Topeka. Obviously, it'll be a great story when she breaks through and gets that first national event victory, and particularly, you know, hopefully for that whole JFR organization, she can do it, you know, right off of that new announcement of her great new sponsorship deal with Monster. I mean, that's just huge, and, you know, but yeah, it was good to get around her. She was doing a great job driving all weekend, and she's, you know, definitely a tough customer, so we know what Todd Smith is capable of as well. And, you know, we had, you know, a little bit of moisture coming and going from the racetrack as well. So we knew that we were going to try and run pretty good. But I just had my fingers crossed that the thing stayed hooked up all the way down there to be able to, you know, put down a solid number, which obviously we did. And but, yeah, it definitely wasn't a round that we were taking lightly. But there is no easy round in NHRA anymore, you know. Kyle Wurtzel, who I raced in the first round, he sent me packing last year in St. Louis in the first round. So, you know, we definitely had to be on our game all day long, and the team were, which is just speaks volumes about how good this team is right now.
Unreal. It is. Watching it is unreal, and I think it's a new era of NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing. Of course, it's our job, doing the show, me announcing occasionally, to point out what's exciting and why people should be interested, and clearly I think we all benefit as people who are in the sport from the sport growing, so it's obvious that we would want it to grow, but why should it grow? It should grow because the racing out there is insane right now. All the effort, time, work, blood, sweat, tears, money that you guys are putting into it could be lost on a thousandth of 1 second on a great run like Spencer Massey. Those guys went home disappointed, and they laid down a great run. The guy has an 049 and runs 373.1. Richie, if I told you for the rest of your life you'd have 049 and run 373 and never get better than that ever, would you take it? I bet you would.
I would. You could win a lot of races like that.
Most of them. It's just brutal out there, brutal. So the final round, Larry Dixon is back again. Larry Dixon, that team, Bob Vandegrift, Mike Guger, those guys have got it running, and it's you and Larry in the final round. Talk about getting ready for the final against another racer that you have to know they're going to bring it on you because they want to win, and you're in their way.
Yeah, and once again, you know, all the stuff that the Bob Vandegrift organization has been through, and Larry, of course, losing a race car in Gainesville and getting banged up a bit, you know. Sentimentally, it would be great to see Larry get another win here real soon, you know, because we all know they deserve it. I raced him in the final in Las Vegas, and it was kind of anticlimactic, but nonetheless, I got the win, and that was very exciting for everyone here. But fast forward to Atlanta, and I red lit against Larry in the second round. So I had some, redemption that I was seeking out after throwing away Atlanta like that. And, I definitely was thinking about that a lot going into the final round at Topeka, getting ready to race Larry Dixon once again, so soon in the year. So, Larry Dixon is such a good competitor, and he's a veteran. And, you know, we all know how good of a driver he is. So, once again, you know, I knew that we were going to try and run really fast. And, I had to keep it in the back of my mind that if we overpower the racetrack or, you know, if any of that, the weather that we had there were to, make the racetrack surface not ideal, the thing was probably going to smoke the tires. And in that case, you know, you're racing against someone like Larry Dixon, you got to be on your game. And fortunately for me, once again, the thing went right on down there, and we were able to get the round win. And that's just put an amazing end to what was a great weekend for me in Kansas.
I love that you're thinking about vengeance up there, and it's one thing that I notice, and I could only wish, and I'm trying to get better at this, but the memories that the drivers have, that you guys remember every run against every person and what happened and what they did to you or what you had to do against them, or and carry that into the next battle against them. And here you are stewing about this, and you get a chance to get some vengeance of your own in the final round.
Yeah, well, you know, that's we kind of live and die by our results as professional race car drivers. So it's, it's pretty easy to remember if you did something good or bad, or, you know, what the other guy is like in the other lane, because obviously that's what most of our life revolves around, it seems like. So, to run 373 in the final, I know Aaron was trying to run a little better than that once again, but didn't quite make it to the finish line on all eight cylinders. But it was an impressive run. You know, in the final, my car drove right down the middle of the lane for once, which it had not wanted to do earlier in the day. And then right by the finish line there, I saw Dixon have some troubles. I think they lifted the blower off the thing, and he must have been driving around in some oil, and of course he'd come over kind of by the center line. But it was a little bit of a hairy moment there, just for a split second in the shutdown area. But I was too busy celebrating already by that point.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I love you hearing you tell me about that, is because my DVR did not get the full race, which was very disappointing to me. So I'm looking up highlights and whatnot as of interview time right now. But listen, got it in the books, and just incredible fashion. Richie, I appreciate you coming on the show. Quick question, because you're also a chassis builder. You're the guy that does it with your hands and making these things. We had the Indy 500 this weekend. We had all this different racing, and it makes me think about these cars. and that once upon a time, we looked at every one of these cars as the as the personal creation of someone, whether it be an Indy car, and they built this car, and they thought about this car. This car was made specifically for the specific purpose of going out there and winning a specific race, maybe the Indy 500 or a certain NASCAR race, and even drag racing with Garlitz, coming out with cars with specific, you know, Swamp Rat 30 or Swamp Rat 5, whichever the car was, the name of the car, the specific creation of him, of men, to go out and do something, accomplish a specific goal of winning a specific race. And maybe as fans and as broadcasters, we have lost some of that because the chassis numbers are like ML-3 or whatever, Morgan Lucas Racing-3. But for you and Aaron and the guys who are gathering up the pipe and bending it and cutting it and thinking about where it should go and everything, you still have that feeling like this car was designed, it's the best one we've ever made, we made all these improvements in it, and these are the improvements, we know about them, but maybe the fans don't know, like, what's different about this chassis you're running now compared to the last chassis you ran, and what did you do to improve it, and why is it better, and where is the technology going, and how much it went. How do we get some of that back, Richie, where the fans are feeling like, wow, this is a new car that Richie and Aaron and Morgan and those guys thought about it, and they made it, and it's better for a reason, and here's why, and look, it just won the race. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, this particular car that we just won Topeka with is the same race car that we were able to win the U.S. Nationals with midway through last year. So, I get a definite an emotional attachment to each of these race cars we build here at NLR. I mean, I think we've made 7 of them so far. Each one of them is just streamlining our process on how we build the race cars. And particularly since Larry's crash in Gainesville, we're also making some more steps to try and, make certain that the tubing that we use is all safe and certified. And, that's probably the next change that we're going to make to our chassis is the front half construction is going to be just slightly different to make all of those joints in the front half of the race car a little stronger. But we're hoping that won't slow down the performance of the race cars. These race cars we build, you know, Aaron Brooks and myself, we look at every little part and try to make the thing as nice as we can and kind of get back to the days of like Uehara and Don Long, that these race cars were showpieces as well as functional, you know, race winning cars. So, we're not going to be doing anything, drastically different, such as a canopy or anything like that Schumacher has brought out here recently. We're just going to continue to work on the small 1% things that make just a little bit of difference here and there to make our race cars that little bit lighter, a little bit nicer, and a little bit more functional to go and, you know, try and run faster, you know. We're really trying to work on getting to half track quicker. Obviously, that's where you can make up the most ground. So if we can get those half track numbers, better speed and quicker ET to half track by changing a couple little things on the chassis or whatever, that's what we're going to work on. But it's just, I'm a car guy, and I really like working side by side with Aaron and Jason Rush here at the shop building these race cars because we definitely get attached to them and trying to kind of bring that back to the into the sport a little bit, you know, just the way you build your cars and there are showpieces that fans want to come and check out, and it's just a lot of fun.
So which chassis is this? What code or what number or what do you call it? This one that has now won the U.S. Nationals and this race and maybe any other. Give me the stats on this. You know, what are we calling it? The chassis? It seems a little impersonal. I'm sure you've got a lot of love for this thing. what do you call this car that you get into?
So this one that I have is MLR4. It's the race car that we busted out for Indy Test Session, and it won the U.S. Nationals. and then of course it won Las Vegas and now Topeka. So this car's got, you know, three race victories. It's due for a new front half. So, you know, you hate to change a good thing, but everything has a lifespan. Of course, my other race car that is my backup is MLR number two. That was the one that I won my very first event in Englishtown almost 1 year ago in. So, you know, Morgan has MLR 001 and, I think we're going to try and hang that thing in the rafters here and keep it around for as long as I'm here, because that was, you know, the first one and the first race we took that to, we top qualified and won the race in Charlotte. So, you know, they're all great race cars, and you know, we're just going to continue to streamline it, and hopefully we don't have to sell any of them too soon.
MLR 4 has three national event wins since Indy last year.
That's right.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good chassis that you got under you right there. The car has got winning ways, I can see. That's a good stat.
Yeah, absolutely, yep. So you can see why we're apprehensive to bring out a spare car or change too much. But, you know, I think that we have the wherewithal to, you know, bring out any one of our race cars and not skip a beat. So, yeah, it's just a good situation that Morgan has got this whole MLR shop in right now, being self-sufficient to build our own race cars and control all of that side of things, as well as all the other stuff that we keep on top of. And, of course, the fantastic staff that Morgan has kind of hand-selected over the past 8 or 9 years to work here and try and go out. And I'm just the lucky guy that gets to jump in the race car and try and go win races for them. So... It's still just a great environment for me, and everyone here has a whole lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely, and you've moved into sixth in the points, 140 out, can jump up big time with another good event coming up, getting ready to head back to E-Town in a couple of weeks, and this is where you got that win, and for folks that haven't heard it, Richie's interview is in the archive here on WFO Radio. That's going to be fun, going back to that racetrack as a defending winner.
Oh, exactly, yeah. You know, Englishtown is a legendary racetrack, and you know, by winning that first event in my short career there a year ago and becoming the 100th different winner in the top fuel category in the history of NHRA, obviously I have a soft spot for Englishtown and really the East Coast. You know, we'll be in Epping the weekend after, and We had some success there. We went to the semifinal in Epping there at my first go around last year. So really like the East Coast. It's been good to me in the past, and you know, really looking forward to keep carrying this momentum. We had a really good race car in Atlanta that I threw away when I red lit. So you know, that being said, we had a good car in Atlanta. We had obviously a great race car in Topeka. And I think we're just going to continue to have good race cars into this early portion of the summer racing. So very exciting times. And I think actually after Topeka, I'm third in points. Not to correct you, Joe, but I'm keeping an eye on it real close. So I jumped right up there to third in points, and that's very exciting for me right now.
See, you know what? I'm glad you did that, because I'm looking. I don't want to drop anybody under the bus, but I'm on NHRA.com, and it says includes events through Topeka, and it said sixth Richie Crampton. And I'm saying to myself, I'm thinking, I think Richie should be higher. He's won two races. You know what I mean? This guy's won two races. It's only him and Antron, the only guys to win two races. But it says sixth, and, you know, you don't question the .com. But I guess in this case, I'm definitely taking your word for it. So thank you for that, because it makes a lot more sense. Like, how in the heck could you win two races and not be at least in the top five? It's not that tough out there. I mean, it's been pretty even keeled. Guy wins two races should definitely be in the top five. Thank you for correcting me. I appreciate always do that, Richie. Always. If I got something wrong, make sure I got it right, because the audience wants the right information.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you know, that's definitely one thing I've been keeping an eye on. But my, yeah, but anyways, yeah, it was tough, you know, and Topeka was fairly pivotal as far as those points go, you know, like Doug Coletta and Torrance and myself and, of course, Spencer and everyone in that mix right there, Langdon. We were all so close together, as you said, you know, the top five or six race cars have bunched up so closely this year that, you can't have a bad weekend and lose the first round because it's going to hurt you. And we all know that this countdown format's coming up, you know, right after Indy. So we really want to be in a good position to start the countdown after Indy. And I think we're on the right track.
Richie, thank you so much for coming on WFO Radio. I greatly appreciate it. Congratulations on your second win of 2015. And good luck. Keep it going. We'll see you in Englishtown.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thanks, Richie. Richie Crampton with us here on WFO Radio, driver of the Morgan Lucas Racing Lucas Oil Top Fuel Dragster. How about that MLR-4, the chassis number? I kind of think it's cool if we can somehow get up to speed on which is which and which one is the most advanced and which one is the most winningest. I know they keep those stats, but I'm going to keep my eye on that. That is for sure. Thanks to Richie for coming on the show. We've got Fast Jack Beckman coming up next. We've got Erica Ender-Stevens coming up at the tail end of the show. Going to talk a little pro stock and also get you hyped up to ask her questions on WFO next week. Don't wait. Do it now. 954-889-6796. Questions for the reigning Mellow Yellow Pro Stock Champion, Erica Ender-Stevens. Got big stuff going on. I know a lot of people enjoyed Memorial Day with Rodax coffee. Maybe a little hot sauce, a little spice rub. The WFO Holiday Pack, which gets you the classic barbecue spice rub, the Chipotle Mustard Fusion Hot Sauce, and the WFO Radio Blend of Coffee is still going on. Why is it still going on, Joe? Memorial Day is in the rearview mirror. Well, all you have to do is give Marvin a call, 817-924-6821. That's 817-924-6821. And talk to Marvin. Say, hey, Marvin, I heard you talking on WFO Radio. I heard the interview in the archive. I heard the fact that you're doing a holiday pack. Why is it extending for one more week? And I'll tell you the reason. The reason is to tie in the big debut of Rodax Coffee on the Big Bad Barbecue Battle Sunday night, May 31st on the Cooking Channel, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. So you want to know more about Rodax Coffee, you want to know what they got going, the Big Bad Barbecue Battle on the Cooking Channel, set your DVRs right now, and rock and roll. So we're doing a watch party. We're tying it all together like a great rug ties the room together. We're tying it all together with these WFO holiday packs for Memorial Day. Coffee, spice rub, hot sauce. $28 value for $22. It's on sale. Everybody loves a sale. We're going to be watching the Big Bad Barbecue Battle on the Cooking Channel while drinking some Rodax coffee and having barbecue with the classic Rodax barbecue spice rub on it, as well as a little Chipotle Mustard Fusion Hot Sauce, which is just great, all from RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Pick up the phone. Say, hey, Marvin, I hear him talking about you on WFO, and I want to enjoy some of that great gourmet coffee. 817-924-6821 for RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. We'll be back right here on WFO Radio.
It ain't just wide open. It's WFO.
Hey, race fans. First, you need to know I'm not an attorney at Spiegel & Utrera PA. Spiegel & Utrera PA's General Counsel Club can assist you with tough legal and business questions at crucial times. And right now, from New York City to Los Angeles, Chicago to Miami, and points in between, WFO Radio listeners can receive a 30-day free membership in the Spiegel & Utrera PA General Counsel Club. They can assist with trademarks and copyrights, how to convert hobby expenses into legitimate business expenses, how to buy or sell a business, contracts and legal documents. Click the AmeriLawyer.com banner ad right on the front page of WFO Radio, enter your email address, and receive a 30-day free membership in the Spiegel & Utrera PA General Counsel Club. And remember, knowledge is power.
Redline Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials. Known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer, or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the streets. That's Redline Oil.
WFO radio t-shirts are now available. Wear your WFO with pride. Supplies are limited. Click WFO store to order yours today.
If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out WilsonManifolds.com, the leader in intake manifold and nitrous oxide development. They've set records and won championships in just about every series in professional racing. Sprint Cup, Nationwide, Camping World Truck Series, NHRA Pro Stock, right up to the Nitro classes. If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out the leader in intake and nitrous development at WilsonManifolds.com.
Your dad wants a tie for Father's Day. I'm afraid he's not going to get it. Because when two 10,000 horsepower nitromethane burning dragsters or funny cars face off, they never tie. Get Dad what he really wants. Tickets to the NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals at Bristol Dragway. Father's Day weekend, June 19th through the 21st. Tickets start at just $25. For purchase the whole weekend for just $79. Call 423-BRISTOL or visit thundervalleychicks.com.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio. Kansas Nationals winner views. And it's time to get into Funny Car, which epic Clash of the Titans. What do you want to label it? It was tremendous. In the final round, it was John Force versus this guy, Fast Jack Beckman, with Fast Jack coming on top. The Infinite Hero car wins on Memorial Day. You can't write him up better than that. Here he is, Fast Jack Beckman. Jack, welcome back to WFO.
God, Joe, I can honestly say it is fantastic to be back on.
This is a really dominating performance. 3 out of 4 runs in the 3-second time zone to go on and win the event. That hasn't been done before. You guys have done it.
Yeah, it was fantasy land. I mean, I think going into the race, I think I had a total of 5 3-second runs or something like that. And we made 5 that weekend, including 4 in a row. I mean, it was just stunning. It's one of those things that if somebody had told you what was going to happen ahead of time, you'd say that's just not possible. The everything lined up. It was an odd race too, because if you watch it on TV, and boy, I'm sorry for your folks that it got delayed so much, and then you wind up missing the later rounds. That gets frustrating. I get it. But if you watch it on TV, it's compressed, it's edited, it fits in a time slot. Man, when you were at the race, we had torrential rains Saturday night. In fact, we lost our last qualifying session Saturday. When I got up Sunday morning, I thought, this track's going to be ruined. All the rubber will have peeled off. And we get out there, and the track looked okay, but the weather was terrible. And we thought, at best, we'd get one round in Sunday. And it was very interesting because the rain came and went throughout the day Sunday. In fact, in the first round and the second round, when I pulled the car up the stage, there were water droplets on the windshield. But I mean, not raining, but like misting out there, which didn't affect the track at all. NHRA would never send us down an unsafe track. In fact, they made some phenomenal calls getting the thing prepped and the ET showed. But the point I'm saying is it really wasn't a race as much as a marathon. I don't think we ran the final till 7:30 at night. I got strapped in the car 3 different times for the final round because of delays. And, boy, it just turned out absolutely perfect. I couldn't have scripted it better.
It's got to be difficult to keep your mental focus in situations like that. But at the same time, you've been through many different races where that has happened, where inclement weather is slowing you down and forcing you to stop and refocus. But I don't know that there's been an event like this in terms of performance numbers, Jack, and maybe the surrounding political extra stuff with the track, everybody wanting it to be this great event to show everybody in the area, hey, there's a lot of fans here, this is a viable business, we want this to happen again, the weather conditions were excellent, 3 second runs happening left and right more than ever before at any one single event. All of that going on at one time, how are you able to handle each of those different aspects of it?
Yeah, firstly, talking to the NHRA folks, they said when they showed up 2 weeks before the event, you know, I don't know, short of being boarded up, the locks were on the gates, everything was overgrown, the track had to be repaired before it was even prepped. My hat is off to everybody who made that event not only go on, but become as incredibly successful as it was. I think this is one for the record books. And then secondly, as far as staying focused, I think maybe my years as a bracket racer, where the schedule's continually being altered, where you might be in and out of the car several times before you ever even get to make a run, and you just have to be flexible, that probably helped out a bunch. And I don't know the actual numbers, but I have been pretty gosh darn lucky when we've had rain-delayed races, whether it's been run later that day or delayed to the next day. So maybe that has helped somewhat there. And, you know, the other interesting thing about this event is we got 7 runs. We missed 1 qualifying run. I've never been to an event where there wasn't at least one, and typically 5 or more of our runs are run under kind of tricky conditions. The sun's out, the track's getting warmer, and you got to tiptoe a little bit. All 7 of our runs, it was overcast, it was cool, and the crew chiefs can pretty much throw everything they had at the race cars. It was a very interesting situation to be in. In fact, the one run we didn't run in the threes, the semifinals, I had to pedal the car. We underestimated the track. It had just sprinkled a little bit. NHRA went out there, reprepped the racetrack, and it was even better than we thought it was going to be. It stuck our tire too good at the hit. Then the tire kind of wants to square itself instead of staying around, and the car started shaking. Excuse me, and I had to pedal the car, and Dell was so far out there, there was just no way I was going to catch him. So what you do is you just stay on the throttle until you know you can't catch the other car, and then shut off, no point in blowing up. And then they went out there and had problems at mid-track, which I never thought that they would, and we were fortunate to get by them. And they say that you usually need to have one lucky break for the weekend. Boy, that was ours.
Just thinking about how much goes through your mind and you're acting on in such a short amount of time, it's pretty impressive. I definitely want to focus on the final round. Let's start at the beginning, though. You got Courtney Force in the first round. You're getting ready for this race. It is Memorial Day weekend. Jack, you are a veteran. We spend time very often hoping and wishing that people view this holiday as more than an opportunity to barbecue some hot dogs and whatnot, and really understand and realize the significance of it. In fact, going out over the course of the weekend, you know, people would say, you know, happy Memorial Day, and that's not really the right way to say it, because it's not a happy
excellent
holiday.
It's
something else, but the fact that they're acknowledging it is a big deal. How do you feel as the driver of the Infinite Hero car going out to race on a weekend like this?
Well, I feel like I have an extra obligation, and I'm proud to carry that. You know, a lot of times you ought to behave like somebody's watching you. I don't mean be paranoid. I mean, you ought to conduct yourself with some character like it matters all the time. And having the ability to represent the Infinite Hero Foundation makes me want to do even more all the time. You want to behave in a way that makes the foundation proud, that makes the soldiers coming back that are injured proud to be affiliated with it. And you're right, Memorial Day is not about the people that have served. It's about the people that didn't come home from serving. And my uncle, Francis Eugene Beckman, died in World War II. He was my dad's oldest brother. And it was life-changing for my grandparents, for my father. And, you know, that was during an era where a lot of people's kids and husbands and fathers didn't come home. And fortunately, you know, the last 70 years, we haven't been involved in that scale of a conflict. But let me tell you, there's still thousands of people affected by this. And you don't realize it when we go on with our everyday lives. You don't know it unless you're directly involved or you have a friend that's gone through something like this. So to be
with Infinite Hero, where we're doing fundraising. We're taking these Nitro coins down the track every single run, and the fans can come buy one for $100 or go online, and that money goes to help the ones that have been injured or have got some brain injuries coming home, and to help their families too, because a lot of these people will never have the same life that they have before, but they have a chance at some type of normalcy, and some of that's through the efforts of places like Infinite Hero.
And now on to the race. You got Courtney in the first round. You're able to put up a 398.4 at 321 to get around her 403. Normally that would be a great run, not on this given weekend. And in the second round, you back it up with a 397. John Hale broke after getting by number three qualifier, Cruz Pedregon, which sets up that matchup you mentioned against Dell. Reinhardt was on a little earlier laughing that Dell didn't have lane choice in either of the first two rounds after running in the threes. It was that kind of a race.
Yeah, it was stunning, but I guess the other side of it is it didn't matter. It really, Atlanta, it mattered for lane choice. Atlanta, we were second quickest car of the first round, and we lost lane choice because Wilkie was our second round opponent, and he was the quickest. And in the second round, nobody made it down the left lane. In the semis and the finals, nobody made it down the left lane. It just got hot and it got tricky there. No such thing here at Topeka. It was great in both lanes every single run, and we lost lane choice going into the final against Force. It didn't make a difference in terms of the concrete and the asphalt, but it can make a difference psychologically. In other words, as a driver, I'm used to looking at one side of the tree for three consecutive runs, and you got to get yourself in the mindset that I'm going to be in this other lane. The groove was a little bit different in the right-hand lane. So I just like to spend a few minutes going over all that stuff before I get strapped in, ready to go, so I have that state of mind that can be beneficial.
Final round against John Force. Let's focus in on that, because clearly if you're going up against any other drag racer in the fantasy scenario, if you're a fan, you're in your car, you're pretending you're running against someone, chances are it's John Force. But also, you and John have had this close relationship. You were an instructor for his daughters at Frank Hawley's drag racing school. All of this different cross currents of stories. And then at the end of last year, his team leaves, comes to Don Schumacher Racing. You've already informed us earlier this year that you didn't know which team they were going to work on. But then they end up on your team. And your team is now, for all intents and purposes, the team John had last year and won the championship with the previous year. You revealed to us that you feel like this extra responsibility, this extra opportunity to take that same group and do the same thing that has been done with it. Now you're running John in the final round. Any of those thoughts that I just, the storylines, any of that stuff penetrate your mind, or are you able to keep all of that out?
Yes and no. I think in an ideal world, you block it all out, and the enormity of it sets in after the race is done. But, you know, it's hard to go up against Babe Ruth and not realize you're playing against Babe Ruth. The guy is the best there's ever been. I can't see anybody ever touching the numbers that he's put up. He's completely a self-made man. He's got an amazing personality. He's done wonderful things for so many people. He's more than iconic. He's legendary, and he's still racing. It's pretty unusual to have somebody that's not just a Hall of Famer, but greatest of all time and still active and get a chance to run against him in a final round and then outrun him. Yeah, I think there was a couple of ways to look at this when I got Jimmy Prok and John Medlin. And one way would be, oh, my God, I can't screw this up. The expectations are on me. And the other way is, fantastic. I think we can do some great things together, and I will make sure I keep my game at a level that plays well with Jimmy and John's expectations. And I think we've all just brought it up to a higher notch, and we may never win another race. And we may win the next 10 in a row. Nobody knows that. The great feeling is that I know that we have a great chance every time we pull into a facility. I know that we're a favored car now. And again, sometimes as a favorite, you start playing defense. I just have to do what I've been doing, and I think it gives us the best chance of having these sort of results. You have to go up there with a clear mind, with a focused mind, and with a lot of determination. Now, that doesn't mean you're cramming a square peg into a round hole. The interesting thing about drag racing is calm is quick. the more confident, the more calm you are, the better you're going to be as a driver up there. People get up there and they want to turn into this gorilla and just foam at the mouth, and it really doesn't give you the best results.
That is interesting to hear that, because I know that you, as a bracket racer, and folks, if you've never tried the bracket racing thing, I really recommend that you do it. Maybe Jack has something to say about that. But even if you're in the station wagon with the wood on the side, it does afford you an opportunity to see your other people compete. And some of them do. They're trying to amp themselves up, like hype themselves up as much as they can. And then there's other people who are trying to calm themselves down. It's just interesting to see how different people go about that. And you can actually do that at your local track.
Yeah, you know, whether you're racing somebody in a minivan or John Force, I mean, really, the goal is exactly the same. You want to win. And sometimes getting yourself so amped up because you want to crush the other person, the only person you're beating is yourself. The reality is it's just about executing things correctly. It's about timing. It's about management of the groove with the car. And if something goes wrong, it's about reacting quickly, like in the semis against Dell. You know, it's great to go out there and win a race. When we won Charlotte, the four wide earlier this year, I stepped on the throttle three times. We beat the other three cars all three heats, and we left with the trophy. It's also cool from a driver's standpoint, though, to have something unexpected come up like it did in the semifinals here at Topeka, where you've got to do the correct thing and salvage the victory. And it feels good, because let me tell you, the 10 guys that are doing everything on the Infinite Hero Dodge have been doing it fantastic. And to know that you're also a contributing part of that, yeah, I think it just kind of solidifies the whole team aspect of it.
Point standings, what I have is you in third at 49 points back, but it was revealed to me a little earlier that I might have the incorrect points. Oh, the points have been updated since we spoke to Richie Crampton. Richie third and Jack Beckman 49 points out of the lead in fourth. So definitely a strong start to the start of the season, and three DSR machines at the top of the points.
Well, let me remind you, coming out of Pomona, that old Infinite Hero Dodge team was in 18th place out of 18 Nitro Funny Cars. We were dead last. Not only did we not qualify, we lost 5 points to the oil down penalty. So pretty cool. I think that not only have we got our act together, I think we can continue moving up. And it's interesting because since, what was it, 2007, where NHRA went to the countdown format, what you do in the regular season doesn't have a direct bearing on the championship. Robert Height showed you can eke in into the 10th spot in the countdown and still win a championship. But it matters because there's a trophy every race, Joe. You got 18 opportunities to leave with the trophy. It matters. I mean, it's not like regular season baseball where you're just playing for numbers to get you into the playoffs. You were playing for a trophy every single time you go to a race.
Trophy, money, and maybe even greater, the psyche of your guys. They're out there, so unsung heroes in that they're traveling, they're driving the trucks, they're doing all this stuff, their time away from the family. And I think, of course, they're getting paid, yes, but I think that victory sensation really keeps them motivated more than anything. So if you can keep these wins coming, I think that puts the team in like this happy state for the countdown whenever it comes, when they're going to be asked to rise above even more.
I completely agree. I think you hit it exactly on the head. I think every team should have the attitude that we can win. I think that you should think that way. I think that you and I talked before we went on the air about how positive thoughts and a positive attitude can subconsciously affect things that happen around you. So I do believe that the we can do this is the right approach. But that's not the same as we have done this or we did do this. So I think all of our guys, even when we left Pomona after not qualifying, recognized what we were capable of. But now we've gone and achieved it two times. And I think the undertone of that is, look at us. We're pretty badass. We've left with two trophies this year, and I don't think we're done yet.
Oh, I would agree with that. And it was interesting to hear you comment earlier about that this could also be your last win, because you've experienced both sides of that. You're the champ. Hey, I'm the champ. I did it. Oh, wait. And it stopped for a while. And so you seem to take every win as a very special moment, because it is so tough out there.
Sure. You never, and I'm not saying this to be negative. You don't know if your last win was your last win. You know, I missed my flight. I missed my flight and flew home. Sorry, my three-year-old's yelling at me for food right now. But I missed my flight. I flew home early Monday morning. As soon as I landed, I loaded my son Jason up. We went and got his ice hockey gear. He's going to take some lessons doing that. They got a free deal to the Anaheim Ducks sponsor. And we went straight from there to baseball practice. I have a very normal life outside the fact that I drive a 320-mile-an-hour race car, and I enjoy that. I love just being a regular guy. You and I spoke about the fact that drag racers don't make millions of dollars a year. We're not paid like a lot of the athletes. Hamilton just got a $150 million contract in F1. I don't want that. I love the fact that I go to Home Depot, buy my own lumber, come home and do projects. I do my own yard work. Well, I guess we were talking about this, too. Me and the ladder fell off the tree on Mother's Day.
Yeah, we got to focus on that. First of all, the audience needs to know that Jack and I had like a wonderful conversation before we started the interview. It was great. Maybe one day we'll have to do that for premium content. What are you doing in a tree, Jack? Come on, you're falling out of a tree? Really? That's what everybody wants to hear about.
I didn't technically fall out of the tree. The ladder and I departed from the tree and went down to the ground, and I landed on the ladder. I bent the ladder. I'm telling you, my ribs are still killing me. I got 9 stitches behind my ear. Tried to rip my ear off. I had those in during Atlanta. I got them pulled off Wednesday before I got in the car Friday at Topeka. I'm still bruised. Smashed my phone, bruised up my hip, my knee. And, I guess I'm going to hire somebody to trim the other palm tree.
Yeah,
but the point we were talking about is I'm still a very regular guy, and I really like that. I like the fact that I can go to the grocery store. I can go to the movies. And that's what I love about NHRA drag racing, and the fans get it, is that 99% of the NHRA drivers are still regular guys and gals. They have a passion for what we do. We recognize how fortunate we are, and we're still fans. So it makes it very easy to interact with the fans because we are them.
That is absolutely true. But I got to tell you, though, Jack, I'll take the $150 mil. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about this. Sometimes enough's enough. I have a beautiful wife. I have 2 beautiful kids. I've got more than I ever thought I'd have. I wrote about this in National Dragster earlier this year that I never thought I'd win 17 races in a Nitro Funny Car and a championship. Now, that doesn't mean I'm saying, well, this is cool. I don't need anymore. I'm very hungry when I get in that car. Very determined, very driven, and that's all for me. And then now I'm part of an 11-person team, and I'm very driven for them because what I do is a chance to show the fans what the crew has done on the car. So, you can all kind of link together and take it up to the next level, and it's one of those things where a lot of times the sum is greater than the individual parts.
Which was the downfall of Lewis Hamilton this past weekend. I don't expect you to have seen it because you were racing, but he was in the lead at the Grand Prix of Monaco, and his team says, hey, you need to pit right now, and he pitted and came out third, never got the lead back, and they admitted it was a total catastrophe, incompetent mistake. They should have never asked him to come down pit road, and they basically completely lost the Grand Prix of Monaco for their driver who had led every lap to that point. So the parts and the sum of the parts need to be bigger than any individual because one individual can't do everything.
Yeah, you know, I love all motorsports. I enjoy them all. Very different approach. And the money makes the world go round. It takes a lot to fuel these Nitro Funny Cars. And, you know, I thank goodness we've got Terry Chandler. That lady has got an enormous heart and a passion for the soldiers and the kids, and she funds the Make-A-Wish team for Tommy Johnson and his guys and our Infinite Hero team because it takes money to put parts in these things. And there's big crews, but you could field a championship-caliber NHRA Nitro team for $3 million. I think NASCAR, their cup racing, is somewhere between $25 and $30 million for an equivalent team, and F1, you can multiply that by 5 to get to there. I mean, it's just stunning what those teams take in terms of money.
Yeah, it's just shocking.
Of course,
it's
when you're paying your driver $50 million a year, right?
$50 million. Yeah, to be fair, he is the highest paid Englishman in the world. You know, of any of the athletes, he is the highest. So we're talking about the absolute top tier on the planet in terms of salary, paycheck, however they do it, which, you know, I don't even know whether that includes endorsements or what, but It's a lot of money. A lot of zeros, Jack. More zeros than we saw out there this weekend, out there in Kansas in terms of what was on the scoreboard. But listen, in the end, your 17th career win, your second at Heartland Park Topeka. You ran in the threes 5 times over the course of the weekend, and the entire tour had 19 3-second runs prior to the weekend and 15 this weekend. That is a successful weekend as far as I am concerned. And I really appreciate you sharing the behind the scenes with us, including your unfortunate fall from a palm tree.
Yeah, my wife says I'm hiring somebody next time. You know, I like you. You and I are friends, but I'm really loving talking to you lately. I forgot what these winners' interviews were like. We should do it again soon.
We should. Now, didn't you say you just got a new phone because you destroyed yours in the tree fall?
I did.
What'd you get?
It was bent like a banana. It probably saved my left hip because the right hip was badly bruised.
What do you have? What is your new phone? What is your new
device? I got the big iPhone.
So you're part of the iPhone Borg like I am.
Yeah, you know, I had done the Android route for a while, and I thought, let's see what the other half's like. And it's getting – I'm not a real techno-savvy type of guy, so I'm kind of getting used to it. I would have got one of the old brick ones with the push-button deals, but
sure,
it doesn't fit in my pocket.
With the rotary thing on it. Have you downloaded the WFO radio application on your new iPhone just yet?
You know what? As soon as I hang up, I'm going to ask my wife, too. She's the only one smart enough in this house to do it.
Oh, my gosh, to type some letters and stuff. Well, do it and enable push notifications, and then you'll know when the show is available later this evening.
You're the man, Joe.
Jack, thank you so much for sharing all the insight. We greatly appreciate it. Won't be long. And headed to E-Town, where I will see you there.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Boy, we can scream there on the night session, too. Hold on.
Yeah, I am ready to rock and roll. Jack, thank you so much.
Take care, Joe. Bye.
There he goes, Fast Jack Beckman with us here on WFO Radio. He's downloading the WFO Radio app as we speak, as should all the listeners who haven't yet done it, and enable push notifications so I can send you all kinds of messages on Friday, like, hey, it's time to leave work. Leave work immediately. But it was kind of cool. I learned a lot. He's obviously an instructor, or was an instructor, at Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, and you can hear some of the great things. In fact, one of the things that I love about the WFO archive is you can go back several years ago. Kenny Koretsky and Nitrofish sent us out to Maple Grove as part of a big event he was putting on, the Maple Grove National Event. We did our show live from the pits, and Jack came over. And this is years ago now. Years ago. He doesn't remember this, but I remember it. And you can go and listen in the archive. It is in the archive. You can find it. WFO from Maple Grove. And he gave the step-by-step explanation of everything the driver does from the time he gets in the car till the time he makes the turn off on the top end, in rapid succession, like get in, put in the belts, do this, do the burnout, open the fuel pump, just step by step by step by step by step by step, and it was awesome. And that's in the archive. You can go back and listen. We always love to have Jack Beckman on the show. And I mentioned earlier, the points are now updated. Richie Crampton has 81 points between himself and Antron Brown. Tony Schumacher is second, 53 points back in pro stock. Erica Enders shows the way, 58 points ahead of Jason Line. Speaking of Erica, she will join us next. We're going to talk with Erica about her win, and also preview the fact that you guys are going to get a chance to ask her questions next week on the show. You can submit your questions by calling 954-889-6796, just like a voicemail, anytime, day or night. But I wouldn't wait. I wouldn't do like a lot of people are doing. Well, I'll wait till next week, because we're not going to do it next week. We're going to catch up with her later this week, number one. Number two, once I get 8 good questions, that's it. I'm done. So don't wait forever. Don't think, they don't need my question. Come up with your question, submit it rapidly. Whoever you are, we'll try to use it on the show, but we're only going to take the first 8. So there you go. That is a big, big deal. Jack Beckman, love having him on the show. And I mentioned Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. This is a great opportunity. I should have had Jack in on the ad. FrankHawley.com. Open a browser, go to FrankHawley.com. Jack was an instructor at Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Now they have something called the Dragster Adventure. And it is designed for people who just want to dip your toe in the water. Just like, hey, let me see what this is all about. Click on the Dragster Adventure schedule. You can see the booking dates and exactly where they're going. Now's the time to get out the envelope. We've been asking you to stuff a couple of bucks in the envelope every week, and eventually you'll have enough money for the course, and you can exactly see and understand what it's all about. May 19th through 20th, that's already in the past. May 26th through 27th, Gainesville, Florida. They are in Gainesville as we speak. Their next travel trip is going to be Denver, Colorado, Bandimere Speedway, June 12th. That is not far off. June 12th. If you're out there in Colorado and you want to do the dragster adventure, get out that envelope, baby. Then June 19th, they're headed to St. Louis, Missouri, a little gateway action. You can book it right there on the website. They will break it into four easy payments for you, but you got to call and say you heard it on WFO Radio. 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. If you're looking for a gift or something coming up for Father's Day weekend, whatever it is you're looking to do, Frank Hawley's Dragster Adventure at Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School is absolutely tremendous. It's something that you will love. You will remember it for a lifetime. We talk about the bucket list and adrenaline and all of these things. And all I can say is you're in control. You're driving the car. You're accelerating the car. You're braking the car. You come back. You debrief and you do it again. And you can even set up schools where you and your guys, a bachelor party, a sales team, a group of clients, your family, family reunion, dragster adventure. Think about that. You're only limited by your imagination, really, how you want to do this. But it all starts with a call to Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Hey, I heard it on WFO. This is what I'm thinking about. Where are you going to be? Are you coming to my part of the country? What part of the country are you coming to? Is it close? Then me and my family reunion or sales team or bachelor party or group of guys can go out and participate in this dragster adventure. 866-480-7223 or go online to frankhawley.com. We'll be back with Erica Ender-Stevens with us here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Hi, I'm Larry Dixon. You know, there's more to racing than pushing a top-fuel dragster down the track at over 325 miles an hour in less than 4 seconds. Like in any business, it takes careful planning and hard work. YourVelocity.com provides the tools and information you need to effectively start, grow, and run a successful business. I'm excited to work with Velocity, not only as a spokesperson, but as a client. So don't spin your wheels. Visit YourVelocity.com today.
Your dad wants a tie for Father's Day. I'm afraid he's not going to get it. Because when two 10,000-horsepower nitromethane-burning dragsters or funny cars face off, they never tie. Get Dad what he really wants. Tickets to the NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals at Bristol Dragway. Father's Day weekend, June 19th through the 21st. Tickets start at just $25. Or purchase the whole weekend for just $79. Call 423-BRISTOL or visit thundervalleychicks.com.
Hey, this is Joe Costello, and we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, I want to tell you about CompetitionPlus.com. There's a reason CompetitionPlus.com is the leader among drag racing electronic magazines. Their trained staff is always on alert and always asking the tough questions. The end result is hard-hitting drag racing journalism with up-to-the-minute reporting. For over a decade, CompetitionPlus.com has been a pioneer as drag racing's go-to source for the latest in news, race coverage, and high-quality photography. Their trained staff thrives on getting the inside stories, and their columnists study their topics before they hit their first keystroke. When it comes to covering the races, they leave you feeling as if you've actually been to the race. CompetitionPlus.com is an honest-to-goodness, free drag racing magazine published by the most passionate of drag racing fans, who just happen to be journalists. Don't wonder what's going on in the drag racing world. Be in the know daily. Log on to CompetitionPlus.com.
WFO Radio t-shirts are now available. Wear your WFO with pride. Supplies are limited. Click WFO Store to order yours today.
Hey, race fans. First, you need to know I'm not an attorney at Spiegel & Utrera, PA. Spiegel & Utrera, PA's General Counsel Club can assist you with tough legal and business questions at crucial times. And right now, from New York City to Los Angeles, Chicago to Miami, and points in between, WFO Radio listeners can receive a 30-day free membership in the Spiegel & Utrera, PA General Counsel Club. They can assist with trademarks and copyrights, converting hobby expenses into legitimate business expenses, how to buy or sell a business, contracts and legal documents, and more. Click the AmeriLawyer.com banner ad and enter your email address and receive a 30-day free membership in the Spiegel & Utrera, PA General Counsel Club. And remember, knowledge is power.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio. The winter views are in full effect. Kansas, the Kansas Nationals, and it's time to get into Pro Stock, where we're going to do something special. Joining us now, the Pro Stock winner, Erica Ender-Stevens, is with us. Erica, welcome back. Congratulations.
Thank you, Joe. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I am doing excellent. Not as good as you, though. You are on a tear, like round wins left and right. The streak was broken in Atlanta just barely, but you get right back after it the way champions do.
Yeah, it was definitely an awesome weekend in Topeka. You know, we made some changes to our car and just went out there with a positive attitude, and we were able to get it done. I mean, to be low for every qualifying session and every round of eliminations was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is tremendous and hard to do, considering the level of competition that's out there in the world right now. You got guys like Jason Lyne and Greg Anderson and Gray Motorsports. They're all trying to do that, and yet you are doing it. Number one qualifier, you run Mark Hogan in the first round, and then gets real tough. Second round on Jonathan Gray, Larry Morgan, Greg Anderson, all dispatched en route to victory.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pretty stout list of names there, and you know, it's going to be a really cutthroat season. I feel like it's going to come down to the wire again. Hopefully not the final round at the final race, but, you know, it's Greg and Jason are both running really well. I know the Grays are getting a handle on their stuff, and it's just a pretty incredible competition this year.
And you've got Racing in Red on the side of your car. How is that working? It's getting a lot of publicity. I know you got a strong start with the program. You told us about it a few weeks back. How far along are you? How's it going?
We're not as far along as we need to be, but it's headed in the right direction, so we're excited about that. We took Elite Motorsports off the side of our car and put racingandred.com to allow the fans and the stands to get on board with it. So we'll see how it goes. I'm really excited about the opportunity. So is my entire team. So we'll just keep pushing it and see what happens.
Now, you are, I think, this moment, you know, winning two races and then going a couple of rounds, losing one, then winning again, like this period, would you call this the hottest you've been in your career, like this four-race run? You're winning round after round after round and going to English Town, where I don't think it's going to stop. They love Pro Stock up there. Is this the hottest you've been on a team at any point?
Absolutely. I mean, we were pretty hot at the end of last year, being able to qualify, you know, on the pole a couple of times and get those much-needed baby points. So that was at the end of the year, and then winning the final few races of the year last year was pretty awesome as well. But coming in this year, you know, we qualified number one at the first two events, runner-up Phoenix, and then went on to double up in Vegas, win Houston, semi at Atlanta, and then come to Kansas and win that one. So, yeah, I mean, we're pretty hot, but we're just, like, we're having so much fun. I mean, and that's the most important thing, and we're just doing the best that we can each time we bring that racingandred.com Chevy Camaro to the starting line. So we'll just continue to do our best and have a blast while we're doing it.
That Charlotte test you told us about a few weeks ago, right before this all happened, you're like, the Charlotte test is where it all went down. We figured things out. We caught up with the tire and the fuel and everything, and it's getting ready to happen. And sure enough, you called your shot on that one, and it has been great. Now, I have questions all the time, but sometimes me asking the questions, Erica, gets, you know, I'm the same guy. The past couple weeks, we've actually done something kind of cool and invited our listeners to submit questions to our guests. Let me ask you this. Would you be up for coming back on WFO Radio next week before English Town and answering questions submitted by the WFO Radio audience to you? Would you be up for that?
Absolutely. That sounds exciting to me.
Now, I'll tell you, the questions they asked Ron Capps were, some were racing related, like what's it like, what are you focusing on, what are you looking at, and some were out of left field, like if you were going to pick five people to go to an entertaining dinner of NHRA personalities, who would it be? it's the audience. They could come up with anything. Are you okay with potentially bizarre questions?
I am. I get them all the time. My email account is full with them every week, so I'm down for whatever they spew out.
All right, WFO listeners, this is what we're doing next week. We're going to have Erica. She's winning races left and right. We're going to have her on. We're going to go in depth. Here's the number, 954-889-6796. It works just like a voicemail. You leave your name. Hey, my name is Lenny, and I'm calling from Duluth. And here is my question for Erica. Erica, question. And then maybe a big WFO at the end. We'll gather them up. We'll play them for Erica. And we're going to get it done. Now, folks, you need to know, Erica, we're going to get together and do this on Thursday, late afternoon. So the questions have to be submitted before then. Are you sure you're up for this? This sounds like a very, you know, the audience, the WFO audience. They could come up with anything.
I'm ready for their questions if they're ready for my answers.
Oh, I love that answer. See, that was a good question and answer right there.
I've heard it all, Joe, so I'm very interested to see what they come up with.
I am too. That's really what it is. It's about getting the listeners into the exercise of knowing that they can ask questions. I've seen you in a Q&A, though. You handle yourself very well, and it seems from the experience of being out there at the ropes. That's what people don't realize. That's all you do all day long, is answer people's questions.
Yeah, pretty much. It's always interesting, so I try to have as much fun with it as I can.
All right, Erica. Hey, a lot of flooding down in Houston right now. Obviously, our thoughts going out to any of your friends, family members, business professional colleagues that are having to deal with that. Our friends in WFO, a lot of them down there. Hopefully, they are safe as well. Congratulations on your win and the run you are having right now. Thanks for coming on WFO. In advance for next week, questions for Erica. I am looking forward to it. Erica, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Joe. I'm looking forward to Thursday. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Erica. I'm looking forward to it, too. And all you folks out there in the WFO radio audience, you should be looking forward to it. How often do you, listeners around the world, get a chance to ask a question of the reigning Mellow Yellow Pro Stock World Champion, Erica Ender Stevens? I can't think of it. Here's what you do. Here's how it works. You pick up your phone and dial 954-889-6796. It's a Skype line. You can find us on Skype, WFO Radio. It's a voicemail. My voice will come on and prompt you to leave your name, where you're calling from, and your question. And something like, sound off like you got a pair, soldier. And at that time, you will ask your question. Now, people have made a mistake, and they're like, all right, take two, Joe, here we go. And they do it again to get it right. I, of course, make sure they sound crystal clear and smooth. So if you pause for a second, do not worry. But this is your chance to ask a question of Erica about her driving, about her personal life, about what she's doing out there on the road, about what she likes to eat, about whatever you come up with. And the deal is that I can only think of so many questions from so many different angles. And she's winning every week. I need your help. So what do you got? Let's put together some entertaining radio for the motorsports audience out there with the reigning Mellow Yellow Pro Stock Champion, a driver who's winning virtually every week on the tour now, Erica Ender Stevens. And we're going to do it. We're going to speak with her Thursday of this week. We're going to pick out the best questions. I'm thinking eight, but if they're about a minute each, maybe we can get some more in there. But it will be fun. And you should get started immediately. Because once I get a certain number of questions, that's it. And that will air on next week's WFO Radio NHRA Nitro as we get ready for Englishtown. And I will be in the fast and furious mood of getting ready for Englishtown and Epping back to back. Yeah. Which is going to be awesome in and of itself. Now it is time for my time. Tail end of the show where I kind of expand on a little bit of a thought. And if you're a first-time listener, of course, there's a million things you can do to keep up with WFO Radio. We want you back every week. We want you as part of the listening community who listens every week, who finds something of interest with the program in addition to the winning drivers. Maybe their favorite driver is on, but you want to stick around each and every week. And I appreciate that. And we try to do something for you. And I try to throw something out on the table. Of course, you can check out our sponsors, whether it be the General Counsel Club or Rodax Coffee, Frank Hawley's, YourVelocity.com, or getting your tickets for Bristol on Father's Day weekend. That's something big you can do. But this week was Memorial Day and the greatest day in racing. And during my phone call with Richie Crampton, I alluded to this, and I'm going to expand on it right now. This is something that we've been thinking about for a while now. Names on cars, names on cars. Over the course of this weekend, my father, he's watching TV. What's he watching? He's watching Street Outlaws. Marathon. One episode after the next. Just back to back to back to back to back. And you can watch all day. You can watch for 10 hours. He certainly did. And get to know all the names and all the personalities and all the characters. And I thought about the names. Everybody keeps saying they want names back in drag racing. The identities of the cars. They want it back. But you have to think for a second, where did they go and why did they go away and what was the point of that? And one reason is because corporate sponsors want all the real estate. We're spending 100% of the money. We want 100% of the real estate. We don't want to give up some space to a fictitious name that really means nothing to us. And if you were spending the money, there's a good chance you would think that too. I know that Cruz has El Chingon on there. Badass. And we've got one of our fantasy league players on the Ignition show that calls himself that. Calls himself Los Chingones. The badasses. But really, where did names come from? Well, as human beings, we name things that we love and that are of importance to us. Things get named that we love and that are important to us. Like children. Children get names. We name our children. But you know what else we name? We name our pets. We love our pets. We name our pets. You don't just call your pet dog one or dog two. I mean, maybe people do. Dog five, come here. Hey, that's dog seven. No, we give that, we assign it this name so that it can build this character amongst its name, because everything has its own individual characteristics. It deserves its own name. What else do we name? We name horses. Horses all have names. If you go to the Kentucky Derby, if you're gambling out there, maybe you're going to be out there at the Belmont trying to win the Triple Crown with American Pharoah. American Pharoah isn't horse 5673-2. Maybe someone someday will decide that every good name has been used and we're not going to do names on horses anymore, and it's just horse 567-3-2A versus 5674-2-B.7. The poor race announcer would have a heck of a time with that. But so many horses are coming down the pike, like what's the point of naming them? And the answer is no, we are going to take the time and name every one of these horses because it's something we love, we've invested in, their time and blood and sweat and tears, and this one is different than all the others for a certain reason. What else gets named? Boats. Everybody names boats. Boats are named usually after women, as are storms, because they are unpredictable in nature. But that is a different story. But boats are named. Earnhardt's yacht was named Sunday Money. And doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about the character of the people involved and what it's about and what's the meaning of it? It is a reflection of the personality of the owner. Wasn't Boat-2-3. And race cars were once viewed that way. You'd build one race car. You and a group of guys, or you, if you had the financial resources, you would do something and build this car. And it was, chances are, one of one on the earth. And you would name it the Joe Costello Special, or whatever, some sort of name. That's what I might name mine, the Joe Costello Special, which I don't think that's what I would name it. But that's a perfect example of a name from back in the day. Planes. Planes get named. Why? Because they're one of one. The Spirit of St. Louis. Perfect example. One of one. This one thing that we built, it's such an incredible accomplishment. It deserves a name of its own. In the movie The Natural, Roy Hobbs named his bat Wonder Boy, and everybody knew his bat was named Wonder Boy, and it was a big thing. And then in the end, Wonder Boy is broken. Oh no, Wonder Boy is broken. It was a big deal. The Wonder Boy bat. It wasn't just a bat. Give me another one. This was a special bat. It had a name. And then Bobby Savoy, the Bat Boy, comes out with the other bat that him and Roy Hobbsley made together. What was it called? The Savoy Special. It had a name. It had an identity. Because it was special. And once upon a time, cars had that. Guys were in their garages or in their shops, and they were building these things, and they made them, and they felt compelled to give them an identity. And if you watch the Street Outlaws show, you know, the Crow and this and that and Death Trap and whatever, they've given these guys, view these vehicles with such a personal connection that they've named them. They have named them, given them an identity with which to live that everyone else can understand because they're one of one. It's not one of 11. There's another one in the truck. It used to be like that with the Indy 500. Cars had names. But at some point, they did just become a number, a drone, a Borg, one of a giant collective of many, number 5, number 7, number 9, number 15. And when that one is done, another one comes out and takes its place. It's not one of one, it's one of many. It's just another one. There will be another chassis. When this one gets old, we're going to put another chassis out there. And then the identities went away. And I think there's something to that, which is why I was asking Richie Crampton about this chassis, MLR-4. MLR-4 has 3 victories on it since the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals last year. That's a pretty good chassis. The thing is running pretty well. It's got its own little identity going, doesn't it? Richie, when he gets an MLR-4, he's got a real positive feeling. It's got its own kind of thing going on, MLR-4. Maybe MLR-4 deserves a name. Maybe they've got a name for it. Sebastian Vettel names his chassis. He always has. He wants that connection with it. And so, to solve a problem, you first have to find the source of the problem. And I think the source of these pipe, the pipe that's out there, the chassis, the pipes, not having names or identities is because it's just one after the next after the next. Okay, this one's not working. Get in another one. Get rid of that one. Okay, get that one sold. This is another one here. It's an example of how plentiful the cars have become. They are not one of one anymore. They are just one of a series that are coming out rapidly. And when this one gets good, or it isn't good enough, we're going to get rid of it. And we're going to move on to another. Well, you wouldn't do that with a dog or a horse or a boat. It's not the same thing. And maybe it needs to go back to that. Maybe the teams all need to realize that everything they build is a little work of art. And just like a dog or a horse or a boat, it deserves a name. And every one of them, like 1 minute of collective creativity should be invested into giving the creation an identity.
I christen thee the Flying Wasp.
That we can then share and talk about. That people can learn about. Which one is that? I can tell you now that I'll be asking Richie Crampton and keeping aware of which chassis it is that's running. Is that MLR-4? Oh, yes, it is. MLR-4. The day something happens to MLR-4, it'll be a sad day. Wow, MLR-4 was such a great, successful chassis. Won a lot of races. Do we even know which chassis wins more races than another chassis? When a team goes to the shop and builds something that turns out to be great and it has great success versus one that didn't work. And what was the difference? Do the fans even get to know that? The answer is no. Back in the day when Garlitz came up with a bad idea, you knew it. That was Swamp Rat whatever. That one didn't win so much. But Swamp Rat 30... that won a bunch. That has been lost. But it doesn't have to be lost forever. It has to be taken as a responsibility amongst the teams, crew chiefs, drivers to do it. They have to, you take the time to name your boat. You take the time to name your horse. You take the time to name your dog. You take the time to name your kid. Why not take a little bit of time to look at your car? Do you love it? Does it help you win? Is it a great success? Name it. If for no other reason than to make it easy for the rest of us to say, oh man, that one of those things that was built was very successful compared to the rest. As opposed to, you know, not knowing. And I'm sure people know, there's people, oh yeah, well, you know, Schumacher's got DSR-14 was the winningest of all their chassis. But I don't know that. I don't know that that's public. But maybe it is. Well, that's going to do it, folks. I greatly appreciate you listening to the show and me ramble on about things, philosophical or not, regarding the sport of drag racing. I also know that there's a whole lot of people that just want to see the cars go down the track and really have no care about the drivers' records or numbers. They want to see cars go 300 miles per hour and feel that shake. But I do think that every other sport keeps track of these kind of things, and I think that every other sport keeps track of those kind of stats, and I think it is important for us to do the same thing and for them to be public and understood and searchable by everyone. That's what will grow the sport. That's the whole idea behind everything we do, is to make the sport of drag racing bigger, more accessible, and more fun for the people out there who are looking for something a little bit more than the world. All right, that's going to do it. We will see you next time. Remember, call in your question for Erica. Get it on. 954-889-6796. Thanks to all our sponsors. If you're going to Bristol, get your tickets on the WFO Radio website. Click the banner ad. Get your tickets. $25, $79 for the whole weekend. Dad wants a tie, except there's no such thing as a tie in drag racing. It's becoming a great weekend, Father's Day weekend. I wouldn't have it any other way. So come on out, Bristol, Tennessee. Get your tickets right there on the WFORadio.com website. While you're on there, join the General Counsel Club, click around our stuff, and rumor has it, that a new WFORadio.com is in the works. We'll debut at some point in the future. How about that? I know it's tremendously exciting. It's exciting for me. And we will have more to reveal about that in the very near future, including the people that are doing it, how it's happening, what is going on behind the scenes. That's going to do it. I greatly appreciate you calling in your questions for Erica Ender Stevens in advance. And we will see you next week right here on WFO Radio.
WFO!
The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.
I love WFO Radio.